I called the president. President, we need the National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
On that ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston.
Yo! And welcome back to Season 6. Yep, that's right. Season 6. Of the Fix Sports Podcast with your homeboy Joseph Ward right here on the Freedom Train Radio, really going down in the side. Audio Shop Talk going right in your ear hole, brought to you by yours truly, man. Really going down. Man, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be back. I'm happy for Season 6 of the Fix. Sound like I'm dropping bars on you. Man, and it's just really going down. It's really crazy. We still here. We still strong. We still doing numbers. I want to give a shout out to everybody who tuned in to the Fix Sports Podcast on a regular basis. Thank y'all. I always take my hiatuses, my little break at the end of the season. And you know, this time I left y'all with some interviews. I left you with the it was Jarrell Webb interview, the Marlon Napier interview, and then the Bruce Fennell interview. And I hope y'all enjoyed listening to those interviews again and learning something new. I know for a lot of my listeners, just people who get the podcast straight audio, for the Marlon Napier interview, I think for a lot of you that was your first time hearing it. So I hope you enjoyed it. So, we back, man. We back. You know, we got a fresh new season, fresh new shows. We got new things coming. Putting together a group of my homeboys, LaPanel, my homeboys. We're going to break down the greatest college football teams of all time. And if you've been listening to this show from the jump, then you already know who I think off top is the greatest college football team of all time. But we're going to analyze all that. So we're putting that together. So I'm going to keep y'all updated on all of that. Hey, remember that the Fix Sports Podcast is brought to you by On the Shoulders of Giants. And On the Shoulders of Giants brings you African history at your fingertips on the go. Our stories from our perspective at your fingertips through the On the Shoulders of Giants book series, the On the Shoulders of Giants blog, the On the Shoulders of Giants African History Curriculum app, which is available on the website, www.ontheshouldersone.com, the On the Shoulders of Giants. And here's the website right here, On the Shoulders of Giants, nonprofit organization, on the Shoulders of Giants online course, which is available on Patreon at patreon.com, O-T-S-O-G. Here you go for those who are watching. And, you know, face-to-face classes, information, educational sessions, keynote sessions. You want somebody to come out and speak, talk about some black history or do virtual black history, you know, hit them up. So www.ontheshouldersone.com for all my watchers, people who are able to see this video. Go ahead. Here we go right here. And, you know, if you haven't been seeing the videos and you want to see the videos, all you got to do is become a patron. Patreon.com/TheFix. The funds that you put into Patreon help me grow this platform, help me turn this platform to what I ultimately want to turn it into, something that can really be a stronger force to be able to give back within my community and beyond, using our audio platforms to create opportunities for others to be able to live out their dreams. So with you helping to fix, you help the hood too. So patreon.com/thefix. You know, it's your homeboy Josen Ward, and it's really going down in the South. So, you know, we got to go ahead and get the show started. So, start with that HBCU spot. Break it down, like, one more time. For that HBCU spotlight, yeah. Thank you. All right, so I forgot to do my rundown. I'm so excited, but guess what? You just gonna get it how you get it this episode. I got excited. I'm sorry, but just gonna get it how you get it. So HBCU spotlight is there are Southern alumni who net pro hoop deals. Who going to the pros, though? So two former Southern University men's basketball players are now professional hoopers. Darius Williams and Amel Kujovic both signed professional deals in early October. I said October, but in earlier October. Our entire Southern basketball family is happy and excited for Darius and Amel, head coach Sean Wood said. Let me say that again. Wait, our entire Southern basketball family is happy and excited for Darius and Amel, you know. What a difference a year make in their lives, both coming from places where they average 1 point a game and making a significant impact here at SU. Well-deserved and so proud of them, their best basketball is ahead of them. I don't know if he really talked like that. I just imagine that he talked like that with that whistle in his mouth and his hands on his hips, because that's what a lot of the coaches that I grew up with look like. So I'm stereotyping like a mug, but guess what? It's all good, B. It's all good, B. It ain't no native thing, dog. It's just, Santorius. Santorius, get your goddamn ass on over here. Santorius, running the line. Santorius, what you doing, man? That boy mama must have dropped him on his goddamn head. Oh, I don't like that little boy. Santorius. Come on, Santorius. No, it's always somebody on the team, one of them crazy names. But anyway, Williams was a pivotal contributor, providing much-needed rebounding and athleticism, helping guide the Jaguars to a second-place regular season finish and winning at least 14 out of 16 games in the season. He averaged 6.5 points a game in 32 games, 6 rebounds, 1 assist per game, started 19 games, averaging 25 minutes a game. He made 89% of his field goals, 55%. He made 89 field goals, shooting 55%. He had 7 games in double-figure scoring with 2 double-doubles. Williams has joined BC Cactus Tbilisi, located in Tbilisi, Georgia, and plays in the Super League. Kujovic joined KB Peja, located in Peja, Kosovo, and plays in the Superliga. He was a pivotal contributor, providing big post presence, rebounding, and the ability to stretch the defense. The big man helped guide the Jaguars to a second-place regular season finish and winning at least 14 out of 16 games on the season. He averaged 8 points a game in 32 games, 4.3 rebounds per game. He started 19 games, averaging 20.1 minutes per game, made 100 field goals and shooting 49.3%, 12 three-point field goals and shot 71.4% from free throw line. Had 12 games of double figure scoring, registering at season high 19 in an overtime win at home versus Prairie View He had a season-high 13 rebounds against Arkansas Pine Bluff. So we're giving it up for them boys, Darius Williams and Amel Kujovic. Really going down, 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 really going down, down, down. Darius in the mail. Darius in the mail. Darius in the mail, all in the paint. Gotta go and beat, gotta make it stink. If you really want it, gotta go and grab some balls. So, oh my lord, is it gonna spin? Oh! Wanna come down the score in your face, hit you with the mace. Hey, in the place to be. Want you coming down, sitting next to me? So one time for Darius Williams and Amel Kujovic, for both of those gentlemen getting those pro deals and being able to go across the seas and continue their dreams. And if you know what they say, you got to put that ball in their face. And if you want to go home, then that ball got to be in your dome. If you want them skills, then you got to make sure them balls pay that deals. If you want to let them know, then you got to let them know now. If you want to let them know, and we ain't got no homecoming, so we're going to let this HBCU spotlight jam out a bit longer. You ain't up missing on HBCU game. Don't know what you're missing. Tripping. Get your mind right. In memory of home. Man, no homecoming. I'm bringing it home. For the HBCU spotlight. Because of COVID, we ain't got no homecoming this year, but we gonna jam it out anyway. Right here on the Fix Sports Podcast, because guess what? We rock with HBCU homecomings. We rock with it. So that there's our HBCU spotlight. Shout out one more time for Darius Williams and the Amel Kujovic. HBCU news. Ooh, this is news. All right, so this is some serious stuff. So Florida Memorial Athletic Director quits amid sexual misconduct claims. Dun, dun, dun. What was he doing? Big changes are underway at Florida Memorial in athletics. The remaining fall sports are canceled, including the only active HBCU football program in 2020. And Ernest T. Jones, the embattled director of athletics, has resigned his position. Dun, dun, dun. Dr. Jaffers, that boy first name Jaffers? Wow, his parents really didn't like him. That man first name Jaffers. You know how people say Jeffers or Jeebus? But that man named Jaffers, J-A-F-F-U-S. Like Rufus, but Jaffers. But Dr. Jaffers, putting the doctor in front of it don't make it better. But Dr. Jaffers Hardwood released a statement on Friday which explained Jones would be leaving his role to pursue other opportunities. Today, A.D. Jones resigned as the athletic director, Dr. Jaffers said via statement. I have asked Ms. Siobhan Mansfield, Deputy Athletic Director, to serve as the Interim Athletic Director to manage daily operations of the department. She brings 15 years of experience in college athletics with NCAA Division I institutions. Men's soccer was also canceled. This move comes just days after FMU announced the women's volleyball and women's soccer would not finish their seasons. FMU, that's Florida Memorial, has made headlines over the past 2 weeks after students and parents expressed concern at the school's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic. Dr. Hartwood has maintained that the school does not have a COVID-19 outbreak. Don't mean it can't, though. HBCU Game Day has spent the last 2 weeks speaking to current and former student athletes, current and former coaches, as well as others with ties to the Florida Memorial program. Alleged sexual misconduct by Jones was a common thing amongst those whom we spoke with. Some cited hearsay while others recounted their experiences with us. Another was an account by a source who claimed Jones impregnated their cousin, who was a cheerleading intern, and paid her off. No! Jones out here raw dogging the scheme. I don't mean to make light of that, but Jones out here wilding. Jones, so you out here getting folk pregnant, bruh? You wilding, Jones? First of all, you shouldn't even be messing with these girls, but you raw dogging and scheme? Jones, you ain't smart, bro. So Dr. Hartwood stated that he was aware of the allegation, but that her family vehemently denied Jones was the father of the child. All sources chose to remain anonymous for fear of retribution within the athletic department and the school. Twice in 1 week, petitions calling for Jones' removal as AD appeared on the internet. The first, which received 777 signatures, that's a special number, in just a few days before being taken down. The latest was posted earlier this week, referring to Jones as a sexual predator. We asked Dr. Hartwood last week about the claims against Jones. He said the university had done their due diligence investigating the claims brought to them. At the time, he said he found no reason to relieve Jones of his duties. When you're cleaning up an organization and you're trying to establish accountability, there will always be those who will come out and make allegations of kind, Dr. Hartwood said. But the bottom line is they knew that my door is always open, and it's wrong for them to say that. Well, I allow A.D. Jones to operate any way that he wants to. No, that's just not factual. They may not see the results that they want, which is, oh, well, we want him out. Now it appears that Jones has shown himself the door. So, Jones, you wildin', bruh. What the fuck are you out here doing, bruh? Hey, man, with great power comes great responsibility, man. You can't be out here hunting these little college girls, bruh. What is wrong with you, bruh? You really out here hunting these little college girls and skeeting inside of them for real? Bruh. You first of all, you hunching these college girls. Then you hunching these college girls raw. And then you skeeting inside of them, bro. You wild. You a damn fool. If that's true. If all of the allegations are true, you wild. Now, if they not true, then some people got some splaining to do. You heard me? But if they true, wild. Then the question is, why did you show yourself out if they're not true, too? But a lot of people do that, though. But a lot of times they be, you know. But you, if all the allegations is true, Jones, you wild, bro. Like, straight wild. And you wasn't even thinking, man. That's one thing that I always thought about when I was a JIT. And for those who don't know who ain't from down here in Florida, JIT means a child. A young person, a JIT, right? So when I was a JIT, I used to always see the movies of the dude, of the men, and his stories about men who, their penis, the lack of control of their penis was their downfall. And that's something I was always conscious of. So that's something I strive on a regular basis, to not allow my penis to be my downfall. Jones is wild, bro. Jones is wild. All right, man, so let's go ahead and get deeper to these stories, man, so we can go ahead and make this tournament, turn this thing on up, turn it up. Kawhi Jones Wilder. Telling you, bro. So shout out to the Los Angeles Lakers on winning the 2020 NBA championship out there in the bubble. Man, y'all put y'all hands together, man. Get them hand claps for them Lakers, man. Winning that finals, LeBron, AD, yeah, KCP, yeah, not Danny Green, not Poole, Dwight Howard, Eric Bell McGee, Ron Dope, man, come on. You Lakers, man, they can't. Lakers took care of business, so Lakers beat the Chicago Bulls in the finals at 4-2. A lot of people were not surprised. I don't think anybody was surprised that the Lakers won. You got a lot of LeBron haters, a lot of Laker haters, a lot of people who just don't like this, don't like that. A lot of people who hate Jimmy Butler, hate Miami, don't like this, don't like that, all these things. But a lot of people saying that this matchup was an unfair matchup. It was kind of a predictable matchup that Miami would lose to the Lakers because Miami had a squad. I mean, the Lakers got the squad. Lakers got LeBron and AD versus Jimmy Butler as far as superstar power, right? So, because the Heat, they beat the Celtics. Yeah, the Heat beat the crap out of the Celtics in the conference finals, right? And the Heat did a damn good job in the playoffs. So you got to give it up to the Heat for doing their thing in the playoffs, period. But I never expected the Heat to win more than two games. I thought it would go six. But I didn't expect the Heat to win more than two games. A lot of people didn't expect the Heat to win two games. But I was like, Jimmy got two games in. And Jimmy had two games in. Jimmy really had two games in him. Literally had two games in him. And yeah, like two and a half games in him. But the half a game didn't get them over the hump. That's when the Lakers had that close win. And I think game three or game four, they had a close win. And it was pretty much over from there. Once the Lakers got that third win, once the Lakers got that second win, I was like, all right, it's really over. Because it was not, the Heat were not going to beat them four times. That wasn't going to happen. The Heat was not going to beat the Lakers four times. So a lot of people are like, oh, man, well, LeBron ain't better than Jordan because LeBron let the Heat get two wins. Well, shit, Jordan let the Suns get two wins. They're like, Joy would never have a team in game five, have a 3-1 lead in game five and lose in game five and have to go to game six. Jordan went to a whole bunch of game sixes. So LeBron gets his fourth, AD gets his first, Rondo gets his second, and Rondo is in a unique position because Rajon Rondo is the only player that I could think of in NBA history to win a ring with the Celtics and the Lakers. So that's interesting with the two most historic cornerstone franchises in the NBA. Rajon Rondo, of all people, is the one person who won the championship on both teams. He was on that 08 Celtics team that beat the Lakers, and then this 2020 team that beat the Heat. So one time for Rajon Rondo, Jason Kidd, Frank Vogel, the whole coaching staff, they get their first rings as coaches. I thought it was pretty cool that Jason Kidd was on the squad, on that Dallas Mavericks squad that beat LeBron's Heat in 2011. But then Jason Kidd and LeBron wins a ring together as coach and player in 2020. So I thought that's pretty cool. Kyle Kuzma, all the boys get that experience. But let's talk about Kyle Kuzma and Danny Green. Them boys trash, man. Get them boys out of there. So I've seen a lot of stuff about possible trade rumors of Bradley Beal coming to the Lakers and the Lakers being able to make moves and change things around to get better for next year, because next year the house is coming now. So because think about it, next year the Warriors are coming back. The Warriors are going to have their dogs back. The Brooklyn Nets are going to have their dogs. So Will Chris Paul go to the Lakers? That will be interesting. If Chris Paul goes to the Lakers, that will be very interesting. I think if Chris Paul go to the Lakers and the Lakers somehow can keep Rondo, man, you can hang that up. You can book that. I think the Lakers will win it again because it's too much brain power on that team, too much ability, too much brain power on that damn team. And somebody like Chris Paul teaming up with LeBron and AD, oh, man, that's crazy. That's crazy. Somebody else who can play the point as well as LeBron can play the point. Oh, that would be crazy if LeBron go there. So we know Tyronn Lue is the new head coach of the Clippers. Stan Van Gundy is the new head coach of the Pelicans. Doc Rivers is the new head coach. Doc Rivers was fired from the Clippers, and he's now the head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers. So we're going to see what goes on with that situation, but we do know. All we know is the Lakers are the 2020 NBA champions, and the NBA is talking about starting up that season again in December. That's going to be interesting to see if they really do start back up in December, because that's a very short turnaround. But then again, from a lot of the information that I've come across, everybody already knew going into the bubble that if we go into this bubble, we're going to have a short turnaround before the next season. So that leads me to asking and talking about LeBron's legacy and LeBron's legacy versus Jordan's legacy. So LeBron gets his fourth championship, his third championship with his third. Well, he's won championships with three different teams. Some people look at that as a positive. Well, everybody should look at that as a positive. Some people look at it as a negative because some people are still stuck in the mindset of you're only supposed to do it with one team. I don't think like that because this is a business. And if you get your emotions caught up in it, you're going to get effed over, fucked over, right? You're going to get stuck in the booty, right? You're going to get fucked over, right? And you are supposed to be down with your squad, but understand that you are a mercenary and you are not in love with any team. And you are not bound to stay with any one team for the rest of your career. And if people think you are, they're crazy, right? So I don't have a problem with LeBron switching up teams, especially leaving Cleveland the way that damn owner talked about him like LeBron was his property after he left Cleveland the first time, improving the economy of the team, improving the economy of the city. And then they go and talk about burn that man's jersey and stuff after he leaves. He go down to Miami to win two championships in 4 years. He comes back to Cleveland. He wins one championship in three or four years. Should have had two championships, but Kyrie and Kevin Love got hurt. If Kyrie and Kevin Love wouldn't have got hurt in, I think, 2016, between 2014 and 2016, 20 those years. Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love wouldn't have got hurt, LeBron would have won at least two championships in Cleveland before Kevin Durant got to Golden State. Now, the thing was, when Kevin Durant got to Golden State, you weren't really going to stop that. Golden State went and recruited Kevin Durant because they needed something to get over the LeBron hump, because they knew it wasn't nothing else that was going to help them get over the LeBron hump but to make their team unfair. And so that's what they did. But LeBron's legacy. Is LeBron the GOAT? In my book, LeBron, this championship doesn't make him the GOAT. What this does is separates him even more from anybody else at his position. So, and I don't even like the Mount Rushmore because that's bad old white men racist stuff, right? So, the NBA all-time NBA starting five, my all-time NBA starting five, mine would be Jordan at the point, Kobe at the two, LeBron at the three, Duncan at the four, Kareem at the five. That'll be mine. Jordan at the one, And Georgia's there at position. LeBron gonna run point, right? But Jordan at the point, and we know Jordan can run point. And for all those people, because you got to give LeBron his credit for playing in a more all-around game throughout his career. But there are a lot of people who say that LeBron is the greatest all-around player ever, or LeBron was a better all-around player than Jordan. LeBron was asked to do that. Jordan wasn't. But when Jordan was asked to do that, he could do it and do it at a high level. So don't get it twisted. Jordan is the GOAT. But my all-time starting five would be Jordan at the point, Kobe at the two, LeBron at the three, Duncan at the four, Kareem at the five. LeBron running the point. And so if I were to say who is the GOAT, my list of my GOAT list, like one, two, three. So it would be, I would still have Jordan and Kobe ahead of LeBron. I still would be. Being that I watched all three of these guys play. I was born in 84. So let's say by 89, by let's say by 90, 91, I'm paying attention. Because that's about the time I'm paying attention to the Dallas Cowboys, right? So I'm paying attention, right? I understand the game. I see what's going on. And I know a killer when I see a killer, right? Because, shit, I'm watching Michael Irvin and Emmitt Smith and them when Dallas playing, so I know killers, right? So I see what Jordan is doing. Jordan is relentless on both ends of the court. Then Kobe come around. Kobe's relentless on both ends of the court. LeBron had to learn that relentless killer instinct. LeBron didn't have to learn that. But in spite of him having to learn that, LeBron's still out there killing them boys. Remember, LeBron took his team to the finals in 2007. A young LeBron took a trash-ass Cleveland team to the finals in 2007. So LeBron ain't nothing to sneeze at. It just, when we talk about this, this goes down to preference. And if it's my preference, since it's my show, it's my voice, my preference, I prefer Jordan first, Kobe second, LeBron third when we talk about GOAT. That's how I would go, but either one of them dudes will cut your throat wide open. So I respect all three of them. All three make my all-time starting five. That would be my all-time starting five. Jordan, Kobe, LeBron, Tim Duncan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And we'll run the table on anybody out there. But I think LeBron is definitely going to be regarded as the second. I say Kobe, but LeBron is going to be regarded as the second greatest player of all time, even though people do be acting like Kareem ain't out there. But, you know, LeBron is going to be regarded, especially, it depends on generation. This younger generation, LeBron is the GOAT. So I don't have no problem with that. It's preference. But shout out to the Lakers. Shout out to LeBron. Shout out to AD for getting his first ring. AD did his thing. He balled out. AD definitely did his thing. I thought AD still could have been more of a monster on the boards. I want to see AD go out there and get nasty on the boards, take them boards and show them motherfuckers dunk and put his nuts in the face. I wanted him to do that, but he was a monster on the defense. So shout out to him. Shout out to Rondo. Shout out to everybody on the Lakers squad. Dwight Howard getting his first ring. I'm happy for the homie. And it's really going down in the South, man. So one time for the Lakers. All right, so let's move on. So adjacent to the Lakers for 2020, the Seattle Storm win the 2020 WNBA Championship. So let me give a round of applause for the ladies of Seattle Storm for winning that 2020 WNBA Championship. Yeah. Really, come on. So unfortunately for the WNBA, it was coming on with football and basketball, and the NBA was on. So yikes, unfortunately. So I ain't gonna lie, I missed it. I missed the WNBA finals, but I kept up with the scores. So Brianna, so I'm gonna have to read because I ain't really watched because I was watching NFL and NBA. So Breonna Stewart scored 26 points after Seattle Storm won their second WNBA championship in three seasons, sweeping the Las Vegas Aces with a 92-59 rout Tuesday night. It's the fourth title in franchise history for the Storm, who also won in 2004, 2010, and 2018. Seattle had pretty much the same core group that won the 2018 championship back for this year, led by Stewart, Sue Bird, and Jewel Lloyd. The Storm joined Minnesota and Houston as the only franchise to win four championships, one time for Minnesota, one time for Houston. You heard me? Seattle has now won a record 11 games in a row in the WNBA Finals, dating to the team's first championship back in 2004. Bird has been a part of all of them. The veteran guard, who turns 40 next week, was once again a catalyst for the Storm. She finished with 5 points and 7 assists. She finished the finals averaging 11 assists in three games. The 26-year-old Stewart set a WNBA record by scoring more than 20 points for the sixth straight finals game. She earned WNBA Finals MVP honors and the scoring and for the second time in her young career, becoming the fifth player to win multiple finals MVPs. Her play all season showed she had fully recovered from a torn Achilles tendon that sidelined her for the entire 2019 season. Yeah, that was a bad injury, but she came back. She came back with vengeance. You heard me? Stewart and Bird were both on the bench for most of the fourth quarter with the game well in hand. The team hugged that center court after the final buzzer. Asia Wilson, the league's regular season MVP, tried to keep the Aces alive. She had 14 of her 18 points in the first quarter, hitting 5 of her 9 shots. She also took 4 of the team's 6 free throws in the period. The Aces, who led the league by averaging more than 23 attempts in the regular season, only had 5 total in Game 2. Coach Bill Laimbeer voiced his displeasure at that the team couldn't get to the foul line on Sunday. Despite scoring the first 7 points of the game, Las Vegas trailed 23-21 after one quarter. After the Storm closed the period on an 11-2 run, Seattle then scored the first 6 points of the second. Stewart picked up her third foul early in the quarter and had to sit for the final 7-plus minutes. It didn't matter as Seattle extended its 2-point average to 43-34 at the halftime. Seattle put the game away in the third quarter, scoring 12 of his first 14 points in the period. The Aces' future is bright, though. It's bright now. They lost, but their future is bright. You hear me? The team was missing Liz Cambage and Casey Plum, starters from last year. Cambage was granted a medical exemption to skip playing this season in the bubble in Bradenton, Florida. Plum tore her Achilles tendon. So the Aces wasn't even full strength, and they got to the WNBA Finals. But shout out to the Seattle Storm, Breonna Stewart, Sue Bird, all the ladies on the Seattle Storm who went out there and did their thing and brought that championship back home. They said the only reason we didn't get that last year because Breonna tore Achilles, but she's back, and here we are, and we're putting it down. So one time again for the Seattle Storm, WNBA. About 11 WNBA. Say we got the basketball, baby, ladies. Who got the ball? I got to have your attention. I want you to listen to words I'm going to say. Y'all women are ballers. Forget what everybody say. Y'all women ballers. Out on that court, yeah. Y'all women ballers. Y'all wanna go and put it down. So, while we on the NBA, and while we talking about Sue Bird, Sue Bird said something that I might not totally agree with. And I get why she said it, but I might not totally agree with it. And I think some of the words that's being used is because they can and they have always been used, even though ain't nothing going to be really done about it. You hear me? So Sue Bird says fans don't watch WNBA because players are black, gay, and tall. Sue Bird said that people don't watch the WNBA because the players are black, gay, and tall. So let's read before we get into it. Let's read. So WNBA legend Sue Bird says the beleaguered league has always had trouble attracting mainstream viewers because most of the women are tall, black, and gay. Contrast this, Bird says, with the more demure and photogenic women's soccer league, which is full of players who are predominantly cute and white and straight. I don't know nobody who watch women's soccer either. I know more people who watch the WNBA than people who watch women's soccer, though. I don't know nobody who watch women's soccer. Like, nobody. So, I kind of get what she's trying to say. I get what she's saying, but I don't know if it's always all the way there because, yes, historically, a league with white women, with ideal-looking white women, will get more viewers than a league filled with black women, period, no matter how ideal or unideal they look. But I don't know if this compare, if you're going to go with that, I don't know if this comparison is best because I don't know the viewer ratings for the for soccer. Let's see. Let me Google women's soccer ratings. Women's soccer ratings and TV. So Fox Sports statement reports that total viewership, including online streaming, peaked at roughly 20 million, making the most watched soccer match. That was a match. That was the Women's World Cup. So this is World Soccer Talk ranking the most watched United States women's. This World Cup. World Cup don't count. I'm looking for like regular season. I don't know. But everything so far is just showing World Cup. So I know people watch the World Cup. But I know people watch the Olympics when the women play too. Now I think more people watch World Cup because soccer is still more popular worldwide than the WNBA. The basketball is, and white women are still more popular worldwide than black women. I do get that. But I don't know. So, to be completely blunt, this is what I think Sue Bird is saying. To be completely blunt, but also kind of simple, soccer players generally are cute little white girls. And I think basketball players were all shapes and sizes, said Bird, who just won their fourth championship with the WNBA Seattle Storm. Is 70 to 80% black women. A lot of gay women. We're tall, we're big, and I think we're just maybe this intimidation factor with that. See, they gotta stop with that. People are not there are some people, but everybody ain't. Just because they don't watch you don't mean they're intimidated. There are a lot of women who don't watch WNBA. So are women intimidated by you? There are a lot of tall women who don't watch the WNBA. Are they intimidated by you as well? I don't think intimidation has anything to do with it. I just think it's a lack of interest, lack of education, lack of caring, lack of all that. Like people really, and I don't really understand it, and I'm always arguing, but a lot of people that I know and people that I talk to just really don't give a shit about the WNBA. And that, to me, that is a problem. I do think that is a problem. I'm always arguing that it's great basketball to watch. I remember somebody put out a clip not too long ago of they put together a low light clip, not a highlight clip, but a low light clip, and like a bunch of women missing a bunch of baskets. But I'm like, well, we could do that for the we could do that for the NBA as well. So that's not showing that the game doesn't have skill. But I really think I'm going to limb and not trying to say I'm 100% correct, but I think people just really don't watch it because I think that's just the overall misogyny of it, though. The misogyny of the country, just misogyny of everything. Like that, people don't really care about women's sports like that. Just overall. Because it's not even just the WNBA. People just really don't care about women's sports like that. And that's bad. That's Sue Bird's opinion. I'm not saying Sue Bird is wrong. I'm not going to say she's wrong. I'm not going to say she's right. I am going to say I don't know if I totally agree, but I do see where she's coming from. But I think it's just an overall, just a misogynistic disinterest for women's sports overall, and WNBA falls within that. Those of us who are smart enough to watch it, we are able to enjoy the fruits that the WNBA bear. But they do need more viewers. Now, I don't think that WNBA players should be paid the same as WNBA players, because the NBA players are able to be paid with their play because of revenue. Not just because they're men, but because of revenue. Now, if the WNBA, if their revenue was on par with the NBA's revenue and the women wasn't getting paid the same, then we have an argument. But they do need to be paid more. I just wouldn't say they need to be paid on the level as the NBA because of revenue. That's the difference. So, but, you know, more people do need to support the WNBA. Watch it. It's good. Watch it. Right, so we got some Black history. We got some history. So apparently, it's a Black dude out here doing Formula One racing, named Lewis Hamilton, who makes history with his 92nd win. You heard me? It's a long ass article. Goddamn. So, when Michael Schumacher retired from Formula One 8 years ago, little did he know that he was opening the door for Lewis Hamilton to make history. All right now. The British driver did just that on Sunday, winning the Portuguese Grand Prix for a record-setting 92nd victory of his outstanding career to overtake Schumacher's 91 wins. Runaway leader Hamilton is also set to equal Schumacher's record 7 championships this season. Hamilton replaced Schumacher at Mercedes in 2013 with only one F1 title to his name and 70 wins behind the German greats, which was considered in F1 circles way out of reach. Okay, so basically, I read that fucked up, but they're saying that record, Schumacher's record, was untouchable at the time. They didn't think nobody was going to get Schumacher's record, right? But then they ain't nobody old Hamilton, though, right? So Hamilton replaced Schumacher at Mercedes in 2013 with only one F1 title to his name. Oh, I already read that. But with another contract looming at Mercedes, the 35-year-old Hamilton could get well beyond 100 points. I feel physically strong, but you still wonder when it's going to tip over and you lose performance, Hamilton said after his victory in Portugal. But showing by today, it is not yet. His 71 wins with Mercedes have come from just 173 races, a stunning win ratio of 41%, while his 92 wins from 262 starts, about 35%, edges him ahead of Schumacher's 91 and 306, which is 30%. I don't know what the fuck I just read. I'm going to be honest. I have no idea what the fuck I just read. Hamilton also has the most pole positions and podium finishes. So he has 97 to Schumacher's 68 pole positions and podium finishes 161 for Hamilton and 155 for Schumacher. But direct comparisons between the two are difficult since they raced in different eras. Save for an overlapping period of 3 seasons when Schumacher was driving an uncompetitive Mercedes. Who has the edge in terms of single lap speed is hard to judge. Some of Hamilton's poles have been among the best ever in Florida, particularly the display at the Singapore GP 2 years ago and the mesmerizing control at a rain-drenched qualifying for the Styrian GP in July. I don't know what the fuck they talk about. Other than dude out here balling on these hoes, right? However, Hamilton's best season ratio of 11 wins from 19 races falls below Schumacher's masterful 13 from 18, a staggering 72% win ratio during the last title with Ferrari in 2004. Man, it don't even matter, dog. Hamilton stunting on your ass, dog. Hamilton stunting on you, bro. Schumacher's 10 fastest laps in 2004 beat Hamilton's 8 in 2015, as does his overall 77 of 52. Man, don't even matter, dude. Hamilton made his Florida debut in 2007 with McLaren, age 22. Ferrari driver Kimi Kimi won the title that year by 1 point from Hamilton, who began with 9 straight podiums and a first victory in Canada after clinching a first pole. McLaren sent Hamilton a tweet on Sunday featuring a bottle of champagne and the words, "You never forget your first." So never don't. I remember her. But when he won his first title the following year, age 23, Hamilton was the youngest world champion until Sebastian came in 2010. Forget Sebastian, dog. This is about Hamilton, dog. Forget Sebastian, dog. In an extraordinary scenario, Hamilton won the 2008 championship by overtaking on the last corner of the Brazilian GP Grand Prix to finish fifth and beat Ferrari's Felipe Massa by 1 point. The Italian team was celebrating wildly when Hamilton surged to break hearts at Massa's home race. That don't even sound right, at Massa's home. The next 4 years saw Red Bull's dominance with 4 federal titles from 2010 to 2013. Then came Hamilton's career-defining decision. He joined his old friend from junior karting, Nico Rosberg, at Mercedes. Observers questioned the move, and in 2013, Hamilton won only one race while Vettel finished the season with 13. "Did I think we could win this many races? Of course not," Hamilton said Sunday about his Mercedes move. By the end of 2013, Vettel loomed as the biggest threat to Schumacher's records. The German driver is 2.5 years younger than Hamilton, and back then led 4-1 in titles and 39-22 in wins. That was back then. But then another key moment happened as Formula One's engines changed. With the arrival of the 1.6-liter hybrid, Mercedes made the best transition, and results were instant with 16 wins from 19 races in 2014, really going down in the side. Hamilton sealed the title on the last day again, although only because of an eccentric double points rule instructed for the final race by then F1 boss Bernie Ecclestone. Rosberg, who before the race told his rival to drive cleanly, took pole position and made a terrible start to finish 14th, while Hamilton sealed the number 2 with a victory. Hamilton was dominant in 2015, sealing his 3rd Formula One title with the U.S. Grand Prix with 3 races to spare. In the cool down room, Hamilton dismissively tossed a number 2 cap to Rosberg. It appeared a calculated put down, and clearly angered Rosberg tossed it back. This would prove a symbol of how a once strong relationship nurtured during their karting days turned very sour. It also spurred Rosberg to surpass himself. The German driver won the first 4 races of 2016 during a campaign that turned into a psychological war of attrition between the drivers. This is a long ass article, but all in all, Hamilton said, "Fuck all this." Hamilton dropped his nuts on everybody, and Hamilton got the 92 wins. Hamilton is in the record book, and Schumacher, you second place. Hamilton is number 1, and he made Formula One history out there doing his thing at one time for Lewis Hamilton. Let me Google him real quick. Lewis Hamilton. So see if I can get y'all a little more little background. So yeah, he's a brother. Carmen Liebesteier is his mother, and Anthony Hamilton. Not like the singer Anthony Hamilton, I don't think. Nah. I had to make sure. But his daddy name, Anthony Hamilton. He was born in the UK. He's 35. He was born January 7th, 1985. He was born in Stevenage, United Kingdom. So really going down. Car number 44 Grand Prix. One time for the brother, man. One time for a black dude out here breaking records, being the all-time greatest. You hear me? One time for the brother. Y'all don't know about it, man. Really going down. Lewis Hamilton, man. Y'all put y'all hands together. Lewis Hamilton. So, college football, man, is still going down. People still catching that Rona, but college football still being played. So, I'm about to run down to you college football scores, NFL scores, and bring you an update on the World Series. So, we're in what they are saying is week 8 of the college football season, which really ain't week 8 of the college football season because everybody didn't start at the same time. So, the Big Ten did start, though. The Pac-12 did not start. I think the Pac-12 starts this upcoming weekend. So, Wisconsin, so in the first Pac, I guess Big Ten game, one of the first that they got listed, Wisconsin dropped their nuts on Illinois, University of Illinois. Wisconsin dropped their nuts on their top lip with a 45-7 victory in their first game of the season over Illinois. They just trounced them boys, dropped their nuts all on their top lip and scrubbed it all in. So, it was right now Wisconsin is ranked number 9, but is that really number 9 since everybody start at the same time? You know what I'm talking about? Clemson got a 47-21 victory over Syracuse. So, Clemson is still ranked number 1 in the nation. It's still like they're looking like the number 1 team or a number 1 team or a top 4 team in the nation. Clemson's defense damn sure look better than Alabama's defense. I tell you that. Alabama's defense is tripping. So, North Carolina, who is now number 15 after losing to Florida State last week. How the fuck they lost to Florida State? I have no idea. So, North Carolina, who is now ranked number 15 in the nation, come back with a 48-21 victory over North Carolina State. I don't get it. You beat a team better than Florida State, but you lose to Florida State. What's funny is a lot of people thought Florida State was hitting a turning point, but they didn't. So, Oklahoma, who decided that they want to win the game this year, surprisingly, Oklahoma is not that good this year. They beat TCU 33-14. What is Oklahoma's overall record? Will it show? So their overall record, Oklahoma is 3-2. They ranked number 24 in the nation, but they shouldn't have had those losses. So Oklahoma. Like I said, they beat TCU 33-14. Nebraska got their ass whooped by Ohio State. Ohio State ranked number 3. So these boys starting to get playing. So they need to be in the mix. So Ohio State beat Nebraska 52-17. Ohio State opened their ass up and took a dump on Nebraska. So number 16, Kansas State beat Kansas, what they were supposed to do, 55-14. So, you know. Georgia Southern lost to Coastal, and Coastal is ranked number 20, and the score is 28-14. I guess this is Coastal Carolina. Coastal Carolina is ranked number 20 in the nation, and I am not believing that ranking. I will not. You will not get me to buy into that ranking as those Coastal Carolinas, the 20th best team in college football. But I understand everybody didn't start at the same time, so everything going to even itself out. So Marshall is ranked number 19, and they edge out Florida Atlantic with an 11-point victory, 20-9. Oklahoma State, who's ranked 6th, beat Iowa State, who's ranked 23rd, 24-21. Notre Dame, who out there looking, Notre Dame does look good. Shit, Notre Dame does look good, but Notre Dame always have that one game or two that throw them off. So we're going to see if they have those games because they are playing in the ACC this year, and that means that it's going to be easier for Notre Dame to get to the playoff because they're not going to be playing the same caliber of opponents. And I don't think Notre Dame even plays Clemson. So Notre Dame beat Pittsburgh 45-3. Penn State lost to Indiana in their opening game, 36-35. Alabama, number two team in the nation, opened their ass up and took a dump on Tennessee, 48-17, and this goddamn game was over at halftime. Boise State beat Utah State, 42-13. Michigan, number 13, Michigan. Ooh, Michigan got a big win. Michigan beat Minnesota. Look at Michigan. Oh, shit. Look at Michigan. Look at Michigan trying to look like a real football team again. Michigan beat Minnesota 49-24. Miami beat Virginia 19-14. One time for Miami. Cincinnati, who's ranked number 7, and who a lot of analysts are saying, team you need to keep an eye on. We don't believe you. You need more people. But Cincinnati beat SMU 42-13, and Texas State lost to BYU. BYU actually took a dump on Texas State 52-14. So that is college football scars for these hoes. So let's go to the NFL or the NFL. And NFL week 7 of 17 started off with a weak-ass NFC East matchup between the weak-ass New York Giants and the weak-ass Philadelphia Eagles. And it was a weak-ass game with a weak-ass outcome, with a weak-ass score of weak-ass 21 to weak-ass 22 for two weak-ass teams. And that's all I got to say about that. The Eagles beat the Giants 22-21. I don't know if I'm happy or have diarrhea. I don't know. The Panthers lost to the Saints 27-24. Let's see what Drew Brees did real quick. Teddy Bridgewater went 28-38, 254 yards, 2 touchdowns. Drew Brees went 39-36, 287 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So, oh, yeah, and fuck you, Drew Brees. We ain't forgot about you, Drew Brees. We ain't forgot what you said, Drew Brees. You said it this year and you said in 2016, Drew Brees. It's still fuck you, Drew Brees. The Bills beat the Jets, and everybody's beating the Jets. And matter of fact, the Jets got rid of Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell is now Kansas City Chief, and that shit ain't fair. But the Bills beat the Jets 18-10. And the Bills probably should win the AFC East this year. We're going to see what the Patriots. Patriots still look like they're getting their stuff together, but we're going to see. The Browns beat the Bengals 37-34, and they lose Odell Beckham for the year with a ACL or MCL tear. But either way, Odell Beckham is gone for the year. The Browns are actually 5-2 on the year. Baker Mayfield went 22-28, 297 yards, 5 touchdowns. Joe Burrow went 37-45, 406 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 1 pick. Joe Burrow be out there slanging that thing, though. One time, man. One time for Joe Burrow. Oh, I lost my place. All right, here we go. All right, the matchup that made me want to throw up even more, but not too much, too bad, because, you know, last week, Dak Prescott got his ankle broke. So we lost our quarterback for the season, which pretty much canceled our season, and this is our fifth loss on the year. We lost to the Washington Fuckboys. So we are tied with them with the 2-5 overall record, which is trash, but we lost to the Washington Fuckboys. And then Andy Dalton got his ass knocked out. So we lost Andy Dalton. So we're down to our third string quarterback, and we're out there pedestrian as hell. Even though coming into this game, Ezekiel Elliott was out there doing all that goddamn fumbling. And we got our quarterback hurt, and we got all this goddamn talent, and this year it's down the drain. We already got 5 losses, and I don't see us really making no real run. So on the next year with the Dallas Cowboys with a 25-3 loss to the Washington Football. Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers out there stunting on y'all motherfuckers. Jordan Love, who? So Green Bay Packers with a 35-20 victory over the Houston Texans. The Lions, like everybody else, is doing beat the Falcons 23-22. Steelers out there looking good this year. I see y'all Pittsburgh out there. 27-24 victory over the Tennessee Titans and Derrick Henry. I see you, young man. Derrick Henry out there balling on these folk. This game there. Pittsburgh held them to 75 yards and one touchdown. Okay. I ain't mad at you, Pittsburgh. That's how they got that victory. They held Derrick Henry to 75 total rushing yards. So, all right, so. The Buccaneers, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the talk of the league, out there balling on people. Tom Brady out there balling. The Buccaneers get another victory, and they beat the Raiders 45-20. And Thomas F. Brady, he went 33 for 45, 369 yards, four touchdowns. He had one rushing touchdown. Leonard Fournette had 11 carries, 50 yards. Jones had 13 carries, 34 yards, one touchdown. Gronkowski had a touchdown, five grabs in the touchdown. Chris Godwin had nine grabs in the touchdown. Miller had six grabs in the touchdown. And Johnson had two grabs in the touchdown. So, yeah, man, the Bucks out there looking good. The Bucks are 5-2 on the season. So, you know, a lot of people are saying that the Bucks could be in the Super Bowl. We're going to see. You know, Thomas, as long as Tom out there, you got a chance to win. As long as Thomas is out there, you got a chance to win. So the Chiefs opened their ass up and took a shit on the Broncos, 43-16. See what Patty did? Pat Mahomes went 15 for 23, 200 yards and a touchdown. The boy put up 43 points. Clyde Edwards-Hilaire had eight carries for 46 yards and a touchdown. Le'Veon Bell had six carries, 39 yards. Man, that shit ain't fat, man. These boys got Le'Veon Bell, Patrick Mahomes, Clyde Edwards-Hilaire, Hardman, Hill, Kelsey, and Sammy White. Man, them boys, that shit ain't fair, man. That shit ain't fair over there in Kansas City. But one time for the Chiefs. The Chiefs are 6-1 on the season. Go back, man. All right, so. The Jaguars lost to the Chargers 39-29. A lot of people like Chargers quarterback out of Oregon. I can't think of his name right now. He all right. I need to see him over here. All right. 49ers opened their ass up and took shit on the Patriots 33-6. Jimmy Garoppolo went 20 for 25 for 277 yards, two picks. Cam Newton out here with his goddamn high school passing numbers. He went 9 for 15, 98 yards, and three picks. He ran the ball five times for 19 yards. Cam, y'all got to step y'all game up in New England. That shit trash. So the Sunday night game was the Seahawks versus the Cardinals, and the Cardinals get a 37-34 victory over the Seahawks. And Cardinals are actually 5-2 on the season. With a good division win over the Seahawks, who are 5-1. Russell Wilson went 33 for 50, 388 yards, three touchdowns, three picks. Kyler Murray went 34 for 48, 360 yards, three touchdowns, one pick. So tonight's game, Monday Night Football. Let me go back, bitch. Monday Night Football, the Rams and Bears. Start at 8:15 tonight, so I'm trying to hurry up and get through with this so I can jump on the Monday Night Football because it's really going down in the South. But that's what it is, man. Week 8 or Week 7 of the NFL season. So, quick update on the World Series. So, if you don't know, the World Series has started, and it's between the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. Or the Tampa Bay Rays. What a time for the state of Florida, you heard me? So, the overall series now is
The Dodgers lead 3-2, and game six is Tuesday, tomorrow at 8:08 exactly. So how do we get to 3-2? So the Dodgers took, first of all, Dodgers beat the Braves, which I'm mad about. Dodgers beat the Braves to get to the World Series, and the Rays beat the Astros to get to the World Series. So they met up game one, and the Dodgers beat the Rays in game one, 8-3. Then game two, the Rays come back, and we're like, oh, hell no, nah, my nigga, we ain't going down like that, my nigga, nah. So the Rays beat the Dodgers 6-4 in game two, tied series 1-1. Then come back game three, the Dodgers like, man, we just let y'all boys win. So Dodgers come back with a 6-2 victory over the Rays in game three. Then the Rays like, all right, cuz, y'all think y'all gonna get it, y'all. You gonna have to whoop me every time you see me, cuz. You gonna have to whoop me every time you see me. So the Rays come back, get that game four win, and the series is tied 2-2. They won 8-7 that game. So game five, which was yesterday, Sunday game five, the Dodgers like, man, we let y'all win, cuz. We let y'all win. The Rays like, bitch, y'all ain't let us win. Bitch, we earned our shit. Bitch, we earned our shit. Y'all ain't let us win. Like, man, we let y'all win. Watch. So, bam, the Dodgers hit them with a 4-2 victory. And that's how the series got to be 3-2. And that's where we are going, heading to game six tomorrow at 8:08 p.m. as the Tampa Bay Rays face off with the Los Angeles Dodgers. Really going down the south. All right. So, couple more stories before we get to our weekly rant. So the LSU, Louisiana State University, my own little ashy. Louisiana State University bans Odell Beckham for 2 years for handing out money after the national championship game. And they actually got Buddy on camera handing money to players after the game. I'm not mad at him, but I'm not mad at him for giving them money. I'm just mad at him for doing it all out the goddamn open. But he get banned for 2 years. Oh, no. He get banned for 2 years. No. Oh, no. But LSU is banning former star wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. from its facilities for 2 years after he appeared to hand wads of cash to LSU players following the team's national championship victory over Clemson in January. According to a report from Sports Illustrated, LSU officials suggested in the aftermath of the incident that the bills were counterfeit, but the school's compliance office started an investigation into the incident, and the team's star quarterback Joe Burrow told Pardon My Take that the money was real. Come on, snitch your ass, Joe. This ban given to Beckham by LSU is just one of self-imposed step. The school is taking in an effort to avoid additional NCAA penalties in response to alleged rules violations. According to SI's report, LSU is also voluntarily reducing its scholarship count by 8 over the next 2 years and docking itself some recruiting time. The moves come as violations case involving LSU's football and basketball programs matriculates through the NCAA's new independent accountability resolution process. LSU has worked proactively and in cooperation with the NCAA to identify and self-report any violations that occurred within our football program, LSU Senior Associate Athletic Director Robert Munson said in a statement. We believe these self-imposed penalties are appropriate, and we will continue to coordinate and with the NCAA on this matter. Among the alleged violations pertaining to LSU football is that a booster funneled money that he embezzled from a Louisiana hospital foundation to the family of a player. I mean, you know. No. Odell, don't do it. No. Don't get the money. No. You're going to get banned from the school and not be able to come to the facilities for 2 years. Oh, no, that's such a harsh punishment. I don't know if you could live away from the facilities for 2 years, Odell. What shall you do if you cannot come to the facilities in Baton Rouge for 2 years? What? How shall thou survive? How shall thou really make it? Shall thy die by thine spirit? or shall thine thrive in the heart of the beckoned, like Odell, because he gave money to players after the championship game. It pains my heart to see that Odell has gone out of his way to violate the NCAA. Why shall Odell violate the NCAA? Oh, why shall he do it? Because now he cannot come to the school for 2 years, and he's just another violation on the list. On a longer list of other violations, I mean. Odell, why? Odell, why? My heart hurts. My soul is ripped from my body. But I shall tell you this, Odell. I shall tell you this. One day. One day, Odell, one day you shall return to these hallowed grounds of Louisiana State University. And when thou return, thou shalt give more money and be suspended again, because that's what Negroes do. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So that was just a long, long roundabout way of me saying I really don't give a shit. But I thought it was an interesting story to talk about, to give other people stuff to talk about. So let's talk about racism. All right. So the Texas football players call on the university to drop a song steeped in racist history. The Eyes of Texas, once sung at minstrel shows, plays at football games and other sporting events at the University of Texas at Austin. Oh, hell no. For generations, students at the University of Texas at Austin have stood up at sports games, raising their right hand to form the symbol of the storied Texas Longhorns and bellowed out the Eyes of Texas at campus anthem. Now athletes, including members of the university's football team, which holds an exalted place in the campus culture, want the song gone. Unbeknown to many students and alumni, the song can be traced back to Robert E. Lee, the Confederate general, and was performed at minstrel shows in the early 20th century. Oh, hell no. Get that. Man, I love it, man. And if it made white people mad, do it. At this point, just do it if it made white people mad. But be strategic, but do it if it made white people mad. So, on Friday, student-athletes referred to that troubled history when they called on the university to replace it with a song without racist undertones. It was among a long list of requests made by the athletes, who said that if their demands were not met, they would no longer help the university recruit new players or participate in donor events. We aim to hold the athletic department and university to a high standard by not only asking them to keep their promise of condemning racism on our campus, but to go beyond this. The athletes wrote in a letter posted on Twitter by several players, including Brennan Eagles, a Longhorns wide receiver. But you notice they never said they would not play. Notice that. That's the last straw, I guess. You don't do none of this, then we're not going to play. But change this racist ass song. The department and university, they wrote, must take action to make Texas more comfortable and inclusive for the black athletes in the black community that has so fervently supported this program. The song has become another symbol linked to the Confederacy to face intense scrutiny and demands for removal amid the nationwide protests after the deaths of George Floyd on May 25th. The football team marched together in Austin this month, linking arms and taking a knee for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, the amount of time a Minneapolis police officer kept his knee on Mr. Floyd's neck as he cried out that he could not breathe. Nearly 1 week after Mr. Floyd's death, Chris Dale Conte, the university athletics director, encouraged athletes and staff members in a statement to speak up and become a part of the direct and difficult conversations that must take place in the days and weeks ahead. Well, you asked for it. Well, you, Chris Dale Conte, you asked for it. You said step up and speak out. Well, here it is. This is what you asked for. This is what you told the students to do. And God damn it, they did what you told them to do. Oh, it is our duty to stand up against racism, he added. On Friday, Mr. Del Conte posted the athlete's letter on his personal Twitter account and indicated that he would talk to the students about their demands. I am always willing to have meaningful conversations regarding any concerns our student athletes have. We will do the same in this situation and look forward to having these discussions. Debbie Bird, a spokesman for the university, said in an email that university officials were aware of the student athletes' list of requests. He said university officials look forward to working with the team and the UT community to create the best possible experience in our campus for Black students. The athletes called on the athletics department and the university to take a series of measures, including creating a permanent Black athletic history exhibit in this Hall of Fame, donating a portion of the athletics department annual earnings to Black organizations, including Black Lives Matter, don't do it, and renaming campus buildings, including one honoring a mathematics professor who refused to let Black students in his class after the university desegregated. Do not fund Black Lives Matter. But anywho, change that song, Texas. Y'all put the pressure on them boys to make them boys change that song. I ain't got no problem with it. Do it. Do it. Do it till you're satisfied. Made them change that song. Change that song. Hashtag change that song. Change that song. Hashtag change that song. It's called The Eyes of Texas. Now I'm going to have to go to YouTube and look it up. Change that dang on song. That's what I'm talking about, students. Make them change that song. Stand up, speak out. The president said, speak up and speak out. And let's help get over these racial humps. But he wasn't expecting y'all to attack his song. How y'all gonna attack the song? That man told y'all to stand up and speak out against racism. That man didn't tell y'all to attack his song, his school song, that been a part of school forever, even though racism has been a part of school forever. That man didn't tell y'all to attack the song, but y'all attacked that man's song. The eyes of Texas have been poked. How about that? Right in your eyes, eyes of Texas, poke you right in your eyes. Change that song. That's right, students. That's right. Give them hell, students. Give them hell. He asked for it. He said, speak up and speak out. Speak up and speak out. Change that song. The eyes of Texas will no longer be sung around here as long as we got something to say about the eyes of Texas. It will not be open around here. I tell you what. The song was sung at minstrel shows. Shows used to depict Black people in negative lights. Change that song. I said change that song. Change that song. Shut the eyes of Texas. Change that song. Change the song. Shouldn't have been steeped in racism. Shouldn't have been steeped in racism. Cause back in the days, you can have a song that was steeped in racism, but not no more. Because these teens, these people are speaking up, speaking out, like the university president told them to do. One time for the students at Texas, I just hope they stay strong and don't give in until they get all of their demands met. Do what they need to do. It's time for my weekly rant. My weekly rant this week going to this coochie-ass photographer who's suing Deshaun Watson for reposting pictures of himself. Coochie-ass photographer. So Houston Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson will face the Baltimore Ravens blitzing defense This is an old thing, but currently he's facing a lawsuit. Aaron M. Spreacher is suing the former 2017 first round pick, saying that he did not have a license from the Associated Press to repost 3 photos to his Instagram account. So Spreacher took photos of Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson saw the photos on Instagram and reposted him on his own account. And Spreacher is like, I want to sue you for this, even though stuff like that happens all the time. Spreacher really being a dick. Even though I get it, Spreacher does have the legal grounds to sue Deshaun Watson for doing it, but Spreacher's being a dick. Let's just call it like it is, because stuff like that happens all the time, right? But people do be getting sued, but for the most part, people don't be getting all up in arms, because usually it'll help the photographer probably get more photo jobs. Spreacher probably lost more than he's trying to gain in doing this, right? But also, when I first read this a couple weeks ago, first thought comes to mind is now new policy. Players, just don't allow these other people to take pictures of y'all if you can help it. Teams, if photographers want to act like that, ban them from the games. Ban them. Get your own photographers. Have your own personal photographers and stuff, and let the own personal photographers do their thing if people want to act like Spreacher. And, you know, make sure you are only posting pictures that come from your account, that pictures that are cool for you to post, right? Because you got to think smart now. You got to think outside the box, think smart, because people like Spreacher exist who are trying to get money because you reposted some photos of yourself, even though Spreacher does have a legitimate claim because legally, you know, those stuff is his property. But Spreacher is being a nice, limp dick. The pictures are from September 2017, May 2018, and January 2020. 2017 photo shows Watson doing a pregame walk to the locker room. 2018 is an image of Watson in uniform from the shoulders up. And the 2020 photo of Watson signing autographs at his Pro Bowl in Orlando, Florida. The lawsuit states that the Pro Bowl images were removed while the 2017 and 2018 photos are still on Watson's account. Kevin McCullough, Spreacher's attorney, told ABC 13 that the freelance photographer tried to resolve the matter directly and without lawsuits, so he says. He and his licensing agency, AP, are always happy to license images to NFL players for personal use, such as this, McCullough said. But as a freelancer, he cannot allow players to just take photos without payment or even giving him proper credit, since this is how he earns his living. And yeah, true. And at the same time, players don't have to let you take photos of them for free. So, Spreacher, if you want to play those games, you got to pay me $500 a photo. Every photo, matter of fact, price just went up. Spreacher, you got to pay me $1,000 a photo. Every time you want to take a photo of any NFL player, Spreacher, anybody else coming back, anytime y'all want to take a photo of these players, you need to pay $500. $1,000. $1,000 a photo. Because, hey, that's how I make my living. I make my living off my likeness, my name, and my image. So he also says, and no one can seriously dispute this. In fact, this is our understanding that NFL has made this crystal clear to the players. McCullough told ABC 13 that they hope they can get resolved quickly and amicably, as Mr. Spreacher certainly has no intention of making this simple matter any more conscientious than necessary. Texans players have commented on social media in favor of Watson. Jay Reid called him a lame. Then Dylan Cole said, imagine getting sued for using a photo of yourself. And I get what they're saying, but I get what Spreacher is saying, but Spreacher's still being a dick. Because legally he does have the right to do it, but he's still being a dick about it. Right? Because I'm sure Deshaun Watson isn't the first NFL player to repost a picture of himself that Spreacher put on social media. I'm sure he's not. So KPRC legal analyst Brian White says that under federal copyright law, even though the photos are of Watson, he he doesn't have ownership of them. Right, understood. That's understood. Spreacher has legal rights to those photos. He has copyrights because those are his photos. So he can sue, but he doesn't have to. Being a dick. I think most people think, wait a second, that's Deshaun's picture. Why would anyone be able to sue him for anything? What the federal copyright law says is that says it may be Deshaun's picture, but it's the photographer's intellectual property, and that's the basis of the federal lawsuit. And I get that. I get that. So the step further to take in this is my likeness, my image, my name. And if you want to take pictures of me and capture my likeness, my image, or my name, $1,000 a pop. I got to eat. This is how I make my living, Spreacher. Now, they say they tried to resolve this out early outside of court. I don't know how true it is. There's no evidence has been posted of it. So this right, this article saying Spreacher says he registered the photos with the U.S. Copyright Office and that Watson did not seek permission or a license for use of the photographs on Instagram. He also said he does not believe that the AP granted permission for the use of the photos. Dove, I mean, come on, man. Come on. You know damn well people just reposting stuff on Instagram. You know, when you put something on Instagram, it's kind of seen as public property. Everybody reposts, everybody reshare. But if you didn't put it up of yourself, don't repost it. Don't reshare it. Some people you can't help. Some people you can't help because some people like Spreacher who being a dick is going to try to sue you. So this is saying the photographer also alleges that Watson previously posted additional photographs he took on social media without permission or a license. He said Watson has not removed the photographs after being advised that they're copyrighted. And it says the lawsuit seeks a permanent injunction against Watson from any use of the photos in question plus damages under the Copyright Act. Spreacher is represented by New York attorney Kevin McCullough and Nate Kleinman. It was filed in federal court for the Southern District of Texas but has not been assigned to a judge. So, man, I mean, I get it, but I don't get it. But it don't have to be all like this. It's just like, hey, man, I'm going to sue you for these three Instagram pictures because you're ruining my life as a photographer for these Instagram pictures that you reposted, which probably could help me get more freelance work, possibly help me do better as a photographer and get more work and more people rock with me. But nah, I want to sue Deshaun Watson. Now, if Buddy asked Deshaun Watson to take the pictures down, Deshaun Watson refused to take the pictures down, then Deshaun set himself up, and he's stupid for that. But if none of that is true, if Spreacher just came out of the left field and said, I'm going to sue you because you reposted my pictures, then Spreacher is being a bitch. He's being a dick. He is. But if Watson was warned and Watson just said, man, fuck this, I'm going to use these pictures anyway. They pictures of me. These my pictures. They pictures of me. Then your Watson was stupid because he should understand that that's not his intellectual property. So it go either way, but I just found this is a crazy story. That's a good rant worthy because a motherfucker being sued over pictures of himself, which is crazy, understandable, but crazy. And also only in America will you get sued for pictures of yourself. So that means changes have to be made. If people are going to be taking pictures at these football games, everybody can't be a photographer at these professional games no more because motherfuckers like Spreacher out here trying to make a dollar out of Deshaun Watson's 15 cents. Ain't that a bitch? I'm probably start changing from the weekly rant to ain't that a bitch, but nah, ain't that a bitch going to be said if it's a motherfucking bitch. God damn. Deshaun Watson. Hey, man. Episode 1, Season 6. Really going down the side of the Fix Sports Podcast, man. We out here. We on Patreon. Support your homeboy on Patreon so I can grow my platform, make my platform more of a resource in my community to help uplift and empower the people within my community through this podcast and through the different connections and channels that I have with this podcast. And, you know, we got a lot of things coming up. Got a lot of interviews coming this season. Like I said, we have this, the bracket. We got our bracket that we're breaking down, the greatest college football team of all time. So we need your support. You can also hit me up at Cash App, Joe War 84. If you don't want to do the Patreon, Cash App, Joe War 84. Matter of fact, let me create that right now. I mean, Cash App, $, Joe Ward, 84. Bam. That's that Cash App. Cash App, $, Joe Ward, 84. If you want to support your homeboy, but you don't necessarily want to do the Patreon, but you want to support your homeboy, Cash App, $, Joe Ward, 84. We need these funds so we can fund this podcast, fund this network, and help our community get better as we do it. Remember our website, you see it scrolling across the bottom, www.freedomtrainradio.com for all of our viewers. Remember, if you want to see these videos, man, become a patron. If you want to see these videos, become a patron. Patreon.com/TheFix. Patreon.com/TheFix. F-I-X. The Fix, Fix, F-I-X. The Fix, it Fix, F-I-X. The Fix, it Fix. Patreon.com/TheFix. I am Joseph Ward right here on the Freedom Train Network. Season 6, Episode 1 is a rizzab. And we is up out of here, man. Two fingers in the air like a player, man. Y'all know we just don't care. We're making it happen.
Peace. I am the greatest.
I called the president. President, we need the National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can.
His heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from Air Force. There's no one